Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 317.
This week on the podcast, the GOP impeachment domino watch has begun. One down, 198 to go.
And Joe Biden will protect the nation from Donald Trump using a strategy of incremental soul saving and forgetting what he just said.
Plus, if an announcement is made and nobody hears it, is de Blasio actually running for president?
And Missouri is the latest state to grant greater bodily autonomy to parasitic clumps of cells than to full-grown living, breathing humans.
Also, are we going to war with Iran? Does anybody know why?
Plus, Arnold Schwarzenegger gets drop-kicked for a Lamborghini. And yes, we're also wondering what the connection is.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find this on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's where.
We're in. One GOP congressperson has been the first domino.
Yes.
And has declared that Donald Trump committed impeachable offenses, that Attorney General William Barr misrepresented Mueller's report, and posted a series of tweets to that effect on Saturday.
Yes. And finally.
This is
It had to
real
start
life.
With one.
It had to start with one. Well, that's it was always going to be a trickle at first. And then
that's right.
In a while after this all figures itself out somehow,
sure.
Either the world will end and that might happen.
Right.
But
sure. We'll go to war with Iran.
Right. I mean, a lot could happen in the interim. But once we're in a position to look back on it, and it may not be us that are in a position because the world might end.
Right.
People are going to be like, I never was in favor of Donald Trump. I don't even know who that man is.
Sure.
You know, everyone's going to pretend they've never heard of him.
I was always a never-Trumper.
Yes.
I voted for him and stuck
right.
up for him for
years.
For a long time. Yeah.
But I've never heard of the man. And then it was going to take someone at the beginning to be like, hey, we don't all have to think this way. And that is what Michigan Representative Justin Amash.
Amash.
Here's
you
the
know
thing.
What?
No one knew
who
he
cares?
Was before.
No, that's right.
But he posted in his series of tweets, said, contrary to Barr's portrayal, Mueller's report reveals that President Trump engaged in specific actions and a pattern of behavior that meet the threshold for impeachment.
Yeah.
Then goes on to say, impeachment, which is a special form of indictment, does not even require probable cause that a crime, i.e. obstruction of justice, has been committed. It simply requires a finding that an official has engaged in careless, abusive, corrupt, or otherwise dishonorable conduct.
Yes.
There it is.
Hello.
Hi, Nancy.
That's what we've been saying.
Hello,
yes.
Nancy.
I
mean,
exactly.
Because he, argues.
Right. He, like we.
Yeah, it rhymed. I was kind of like into it, and then I was like, this is not grammatically correct. He, like us, argues that Congress has a responsibility here to do something. This is their constitutional responsibility.
Yes.
They are supposed to act in a situation like this.
Yes.
Even if it's not politically convenient, you
correct.
Have to do the right thing.
This is their way, and I talked about this last week on the podcast, but like this impeachment is the way that they can check the president.
Yeah.
It's not through the courts. Yes, I mean, you can go through the courts, but like that, if we're going to be sticklers to the Constitution, which, look, I'm not.
Right.
But I mean,
well,
if
look,
we're
they
gonna,
aren't either.
The
so.
Republicans supposedly are.
Right.
So if they're going to pretend like they are, the way that this branch of government checks that branch of government is through impeachment.
Yeah.
That's it. That's what you do.
And you don't, listen, for people that are trying to argue with us that it won't do anything because obviously the Senate's not going to remove him from office, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, who cares?
Impeachment requires hearings. And the hearings
yes.
are where you learn the shit.
Yes.
You have to start impeachment hearings to find out all of the things that you learn in an impeachment hearing.
Yeah.
So you need to, it doesn't matter
also,
if you think it's not.
Think of the ratings.
That's right.
Come
it would
on.
Make such good television.
That's it.
If we have sat around and watched so many boring fucking hearings as a nation.
And they're only ever like a day at a time. Just think
I mean,
if we could
this
just
could
have
go on
impeachment
for weeks.
Hearings for weeks. I mean, that's the dream. Guys.
That's it.
Yeah.
We could be irate on Twitter for months over that.
So long.
I mean, but you have to do something.
Yeah.
And the reason you do an impeachment, you start an impeachment hearing or you start an impeachment process is for the hearings. It's not necessarily because you think, well, if we impeach him, everything's solved. Obviously, that's not the case. But also, you need some Republicans on board in order to get enough cooperation to make it a meaningful thing and not just like a stunt.
Yeah.
And this is a sign that there are probably Republicans who feel a little bit stuck at the moment.
He can't
starting
be
to emerge.
Alone. He
can't
might
be
the ballsiest.
He is.
But he's, well, he definitely is.
Right.
At this point, he
this is
unequivocally
ballsy.
Is.
Right.
But he certainly is not alone.
No, of
There's
course
no
not.
Way that he hasn't had a discussion with one of his friends who didn't tacitly agree with him.
Well, you have
this.
To remember, I mean, a lot of these people come from districts that Obama won.
Oh, yeah, of
they
course.
They come from states that are fairly evenly split.
Yeah.
They come from communities that are changing. You can't. The House is where you can find the Republicans who don't have as much to gain by standing with Trump.
Right.
They're not state level politicians.
Right.
They're not. I mean, you know, state. You know, they don't run a
represent
the whole state. Is what I'm trying to say using the words that I don't know apparently. But I mean, they have a much smaller constituency, a much more specific constituency, and their constituency may not be aligned with the general, you know, Republican ethos at the moment, if you can call it that. So this is, I'm keeping my eye on who's next.
That's
but
right.
there are going to be moments like this where slowly little things start to fall in
small
ways.
Even today, I feel like I read something where Mitt Romney said that, like, this was very courageous. I think he also then said that he, like, disagreed with his take on the findings or whatever. But I mean, like, Mitt Romney has been somebody who's been at odds with the president for a long time. But I mean, just the fact that he sort of, like, didn't denounce this sort of, like, out of hand, I think is there's gonna be everybody. And look, once the first person says it, then every other person has to get asked about it.
Exactly.
So it's like every time that a Republican gets in front of a television camera, even if it's to talk about whatever it is that doesn't have anything to do with this, they're gonna get asked about Justin Amash and his impeachment statements.
Yeah. No, and also, there is a sector of Republicans like Mitt Romney who came into office specifically to try to steal back the momentum.
Right.
And so Romney and, you know, these sort of other quote unquote moderate, I would say they're still extremists, but here we are, as, you know, moderate Republicans are there specifically to try to take back the reins. And obviously in the Senate, that's very hard to do. But I think the more people that get asked about it, the more that are going to have slip ups where they accidentally admit that they agree, the more cover there's going to be for other people to come forward with their own slip ups.
Well, and that's what we have always said is like that once there's one,
there's cover.
Then there's cover, right?
Yeah.
You needed the first one.
And especially in a body where they don't have the majority anyway. I mean, we could impeach the president without their cooperation at all.
Yeah,
so
it's like, why
cares
not
what their position
join
is
with
on
the
it?
The majority. I mean,
well, why not just
gonna
join with what's right-ish?
Well,
I mean,
that too,
obviously they can't join. They're not fully joining with what's right.
Yeah.
Because they've been pushing forward a lot of bad policy. But, you know what I'm saying. In any case, we have our own dramas on the left, though, so don't worry.
Yeah.
Joe Biden is running for president.
Joe Biden is a confused man.
Sure is.
Which is not surprising.
No.
I mean, he had his first big campaign rally the other day as like an official candidate. And it was in Pennsylvania, of course, because it's his home state. And like, that's also like going to be a biggie in 2020. So like, sure. But he's so confused.
He doesn't he doesn't know what he's campaigning on. He doesn't know what he's campaigning for.
Because his whole thing yesterday was, well, first off, let's take you back to his initial announcement. Slash horror film that he's been promoting.
Yeah.
about, you know, crazed faces and bulging veins and the soul of America and horror music and sort of, you know, shots of Nazis and just like, oh my God, what am I watching? And so you have that depiction of the current Republican Party.
Right.
And then you have his speech the other day
where
he really just thinks that it's best that if we just work with them, and that also nominating somebody who's really angry is probably not the way to go.
Of course.
Huh?
Was like, what if if we're not to nominate an angry person?
Sure.
Are we also then to assume that we should not nominate the man in his announcement video?
I know.
That man seemed pretty fucking pissed.
Enraged.
I mean, he's talking about this sort of like battle for the soul of America.
Yes.
And that, you know, is the kind of rhetoric that you expect to hear from centrist candidates anyway, because it means nothing.
Well,
but if he's trying to initially position himself as incredibly angry about Charlottesville and incredibly angry about what's happening to the Republican Party, and then going to still get up in front of crowds and say, but, you know, we should assume that we're going to keep working with them.
Sure.
We should do our best to cooperate.
And it also is fascinating to me as a person who was stonewalled at every turn for 8 years, well, 6 years, I guess, once the Republicans took back control of Congress. But, I mean, I just don't get how he thinks that these people are going to want to, you know, we've said this for so long, you know, it's just like Democrats are always just, you know, we said it in 2012, like, oh, well, if Obama gets reelected, then it'll sort of like break, you know, the sort of like, you know, stalling that we have in the Senate, because it'll just be like, okay, well, he's won a second term. It's like,
now we need to
let's move on with like our lives and like actually do something. That didn't happen. There was a Supreme Court seat stolen. You know, I mean, like, and that's not the only time where we've seen something like that, where it's always the Democrats who have to have some sort of like call for unity. And then the Republicans are sort of like, call for unity. Right. Like, fuck you. We're not,
we don't do
not,
unity.
We're not into that.
Like, they only call for unity.
That's not what we're here for.
When Democrats have majorities in every chamber.
And he really just seemed, he's confusing himself because he was talking about healthcare, and so he was talking about Obamacare, and he was like, I know how to win a bare knuckle fight. But then he's also like, we have to work together. And it's like, are we in a bare knuckle fight for the soul of America?
We need to stop fighting and start fixing.
Yeah. So are we fixing? Or are we in a bare knuckle fight?
It's, you can't know.
You can't.
You can't. And he wants you to know that you can't elect anyone who's doing either of those things. So you should vote for him.
Vote for him.
Right.
Because he will do nothing.
He'll do nothing. So we are all set in that case. It's just like, this is classic. I mean, this is a man who, and it's easy to forget this in the midst of him having all this momentum coming into these early, you know, this early part of the race. This is a man who's fucked up running for president in myriad ways multiple times.
Oh, yeah.
And he's fucked up just being a guy in public many times because he says dumb shit all the time by accident.
And this wasn't by accident. I assume
somebody wrote this. But this is like, he's famous for flubbing. He's famous for accidentally ruining his own life.
Yep.
He has done this for years. It's why the VP slot was perfect for him.
Oh, yeah.
Because there are no responsibilities,
really,
when you're vice president other than to smile.
Yeah.
And he's great at smiling.
Yeah. It's like, did you, I know you did. I finally got around to watching
the end of the
Veep finale. And like, it was just so funny when she was just basically like, when she offered Jonah the Veep slot and everybody was like, no, you can't do it.
And she was like, I know better than anyone.
She was like, this is where you put him.
Right. Exactly.
Like, the person who was like the most ill-equipped to be in public life. You throw him in the Veep office.
You can't do anything from there.
And Joe Biden was a perfect person.
The best Veep we've probably ever had.
I would say.
I mean, a great vice president.
Great.
One of the greatest.
Yep.
But maybe that's where it caps out for him.
I would contend that it does.
There's a few other people who are also running for president who are also not
going to be president.
Going to be president and not qualified for that slot.
Right. Probably not going to be vice president either.
No. Some of these people are not going to be remembered as having run for president in weeks from now.
In fact, he might be run out of his current job for this.
He might already be forgotten as a presidential candidate and ruined in his current job. Because Bill de Blasio, for some reason, announced he was running for president last week.
He did find a way to stand out, though.
Yeah, well, he fucked up his
announcement. By being probably the most, more people were mad about that maybe not mad, but just sort of like, huh?
Right,
It was the most head-scratching of the announcements, I think.
Well, because he got scooped by a high school student. That's why. Yeah. First, so a high schooler in Missouri tweeted that de Blasio was going to visit the Truman Club in Sioux City, Iowa.
Right.
And the first stop on his, quote, presidential announcement tour.
And in his tweet, he included, like, the press release from the Truman Club, and they had misspelled his name.
I know.
Oh.
It's like, you know.
Right. That's worse than, like, remember when we were talking about, like, how there were, like, those events where, like, some of the presidential candidates were having to wear a name tag?
Yeah.
This is, like,
worse than that.
Because, like, those people probably at least spelled the name tags properly.
Yeah. No. This just goes to show you how little interest there is in Iowa in Bill de Blasio. And rightfully so.
I mean,
he's the mayor of New York City. He has nothing to do with them.
No.
Couldn't be less relevant to their lives. He also did an interview on GMA and was like shouted down by protesters saying, you can't run the city or can't run the city, can't run the country. And he also got drowned out by protesters when he was trying to make some climate announcement at Trump Towers. Here's what I'm going to say about this situation. Bill de Blasio pulled off a sort of miraculous re-election campaign because if you asked anyone in the sort of middle-class media elite world, they all said that he was universally hated. And it's clear he wasn't because he got a, you know, he didn't win by as huge a margin as he did in the first round, but he won by a pretty big margin.
Yeah. And he likes to talk about those margins.
Right. Well, that's the only thing he has to talk about. And I would contend that probably that's because there were certain campaign promises he delivered on that are not things that affect the lives of upper and
middle class
people. Things like universal pre-K and, you know, services going to outer boroughs and to poorer neighborhoods that hadn't seen services in years. I think there was a certain amount of that that happened. And I think because of that, a lot of people who are not traditionally part of the vocal New York City, you know, the political majority voted for him because he had made their lives better. And that's great.
Yeah.
I don't think that it's smart, though, when the media elite are the people most hellbent on hating you to then think that you should run for president because they are the only people anyone hears from.
Exactly.
They're the only people with access to the media because they are the media. So not only is he just like winging it, like what is his
campaign? He's got no staffers. No, well, I mean, like, well, and that's what, like, there was some quote in this political article that I was reading, basically, like, from someone who sort of is like a, you know, a big kind of like campaign muckety muck, basically, mm-hmm. who's like not necessarily working for anyone this cycle, but was just kind of like, it almost seems like he doesn't realize he's running against like real campaigns.
Yeah.
Like this is, there's 23 other people in the race and they're all very, not all of them, but some most of them serious people,
right,
who have serious campaigns, who have serious staffers, who have serious ground games, who
are serious.
Right, exactly. And it doesn't seem like he is serious, at least yet. And it's late to not be serious as the 23rd person. I mean, he's already...
It's too late, yeah.
He's going to miss the first debate. He himself has acknowledged that. He's not going to get the 65,000 donors.
It's also not great when more than 3/4 of your own constituents are not in favor of you running.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is
not ideal.
A shakeup that we had in the city, at the city level, in the city council a few years ago, back when de Blasio became the mayor. There was, you know, Christine Quinn was supposed to become the mayor that year.
Oh, yeah.
Christine Quinn didn't become the mayor because her constituents, my childhood neighborhood, didn't want her to be the mayor. And you really can't run without a base from your own community.
Sure.
If you have nothing, then you have nothing.
Yeah, but like 76% in a
76% of the city
poll.
Was like, well,
no.
And this is, does no one deserve representation anymore? Like, well, we're all supposed to just pay these idiots to go campaign full time?
Because 76%, we just told you about how he got reelected by a fairly wide margin. So that 76% who say that he shouldn't run for president isn't because they don't like him.
No, it's because they want him to be the mayor.
Right, exactly. Because I would assume that you would probably get maybe not 76%, but you would get a fairly large portion of California probably saying that they didn't want Kamala Harris to be running for president.
Exactly.
Because she's doing a good job, serviceable enough job in the Senate. She's not going to win the presidential election. So it's like, get back to fucking work.
Yeah. And especially, I feel like there is a sense, especially in New York City, it may be compounded by the fact that Donald Trump is from New York City, that there is like, this is a crisis moment and we need people to be paying attention.
Right.
And I feel
that a New Yorker is, and you've even said this yourself, that a New Yorker is perhaps best equipped to take him down, but it's probably not this one.
No. The only, like, there is only a certain dynamic of New Yorkers that I feel like could take him down in this moment. And
none of them have talked about running.
Bill de Blasio is not that. At most, Bernie Sanders is that New Yorker. You know, Bernie Sanders, we forget, is a New Yorker, but you can't forget because he sounds like a New Yorker. But, I mean, he has a dynamic that I think could take down Trump just because I think he understands the kind of blowhard that Trump is.
Yeah.
De Blasio is not the guy for this right now.
No.
He doesn't offer any of the qualities that are the right qualities. But I read an interesting article this week. I think it was in like Truth Out or somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
I think we posted it on our Facebook page. It's about the business of running for president. And if you're wondering why so many people are declaring who obviously have no business running for president because Steve Bullock is not going to be the president.
No.
It's because they're doing it to raise money and raise their profile for statewide races or other kinds of races. And there is such a big industry.
Yeah, they're making a lot of money, too.
You can roll over the money into your next run.
They're all going to have book deals after this.
Exactly.
This is how Bernie Sanders became a millionaire, lest we forget.
Right,
he's getting raked over the coals for becoming a millionaire, but it was because he wrote a best-selling book after he ran for president the last time around.
And the man can rake in money for campaign runs or whatever by saying one thing on the internet. Like, this is a really lucrative business to be in, and that is why all these people are doing it. Yeah. Seth Moulton is not going to be the president either, but he has his eye on higher office.
I tried this week at one point to remember all 23 of them that were running.
Did you get 17,
actually,
you said?
Yeah, I got to 17, felt pretty good about it and hilariously forgot Jay Inslee after, like, for weeks berating you for forgetting Jay Inslee.
I mean, I would have forgotten him, too, and it's all we've talked about. He's the candidate
we
discussed
really
the most.
I'm going to go with that I got 18 just because in the past I've remembered Jay Inslee. But yeah, it's like, you can't, like,
you don't even know who these
people
are. Not
only is Seth Moulton not going to be president, he's not going to be a person who your brain can recall if forced to tell people who are running for president.
For a while, my mom was walking around doing a hilarious trivia thing where she just asked everyone who John Kerry's running mate had been. And nobody could say. I couldn't say. I had forgotten. Everyone had forgotten.
No, I
can't. But I mean, and I can, and I voted for the man in the primary.
I know, so did I. Well, no, I didn't, because I couldn't.
I did, and then I got disenfranchised because he ran out of the, left the race after my absentee ballot had been submitted.
It was John Edwards, by the way.
Yeah, it was John Edwards. but it's like the most hilarious stumper because there are just certain people in the political process that are also Rands that you just forget. And that includes up to people like John Edwards.
Who
left in disgrace.
I was going to say, who had a story. Like, that's a story that
you
might
know
remember.
Who John Edwards is. But you don't remember that he was the vice presidential candidate for any campaign.
No.
You just can't. You can't know. And so I feel like a lot of these people are doing this, you know, to raise their profile back home.
Totally.
Where people have already heard of them. Or are maybe doing it to try to sort of angle for some sort of expertise, you know, cabinet post or something in a very specific area.
Yeah.
But these are not all people that are thinking they're going to be the president. And I think de Blasio is just trying to jump in on that cash cow.
Yeah, I think probably so.
And I think they're going to run out of cash.
I was going to say.
Eventually. How many?
We're not going to.
Fucking people
are. We're not. They're, all of them are not going to write a best-selling book, by the way.
No, certainly not. A lot of them are not even going to write a best-selling op-ed. Some of these people are people that we're going to immediately forget existed. I mean, there's going to be an era where somebody says to you, remember Pete Buttigieg?
No.
And you're going to say no. Yeah. And I know that's crazy to think about now.
Right.
But that era will come.
Because he's having a moment.
Right. But that era is going to happen. One day, someone's going to ask you, who's Pete Buttigieg? And you're going to be like,
that's a crazy name.
That's a crazy name.
And then you're
going to
spell it for him. And they're going to be like, no. Get out of here.
Exactly.
Please leave.
Right.
Just stop talking. Stop saying things.
Yeah. You're going to forget what state he was from. You're going to forget all the facts about
him. I might have forgot.
I mean, I think I might not know. No. Is it Indiana?
It's Indiana. Okay.
But, you know, this is part of a business.
Yeah.
This is not legit people trying to be the president. Yeah. And so that's part of what's getting so confusing here.
Yeah.
But again, we're into a big primary, so that's not necessarily a problem for me. I just think we should all remember as these nonsense people start running for president that a lot of them are doing it for nonsense reasons.
They have a separate angle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Kirsten Gillibrand, I think, is a person who doesn't have another angle.
No, she wants to be the
president. And is just a person who actually wants to be the president. And she is also probably a person who won't get to be the president.
That's right.
Which, you know, sure.
Right.
But however, I would contend that she is a person who should get to debate being for president.
Totally.
So I would do as Cory Booker's deputy campaign manager did and donate to her.
Yeah.
Which was an interesting thing to do. But she posted on Twitter just basically because Gillibrand has been so vocal about these abortion bills
well,
that have passed
really
in the last
her...
week. And we're going to get to those in a second. But that's her. Yeah. And so because she is... And I got either an email from her or saw something on Facebook, because I follow her on Facebook, basically sort of like imploring people to like give her money because she might miss the debate. And I took a screenshot of it and I sent it to you. And I was like, I was shocked. I was like, is she going to miss this debate? It's odd to me that I realized that she sort of is like, you know, she's kind of a moderate. What is she offering? But she's also like, if you've seen her, like, there's no way to not be impressed by her more so than some of these other folks that are running who are not offering any more than she is.
Well, and she's
she's not more or less impressive than Kamala Harris or Pete Buttigieg or
she's someone whose moment hasn't come yet. She hasn't had the right opportunity to have a moment. Well, she obviously has been planning to run for president for years, by the way. She's been cleaning up her record for years, so we've known she was going to be in the race since the beginning of time. One thing that I don't think she knew was how many other people who had done none of this prep work were also planning to be in the race with her.
Sure.
And so I think
can you imagine? I bet that she's just like really seething about
I'm
this.
I'm sure she is. Like, she spent all this time making controversial votes and shit just so that this could happen to her.
Right.
She could be also ran in a race
just
with Seth
Andrew
Moulton.
Andrew Yang could be in a presidential debate while she watches it from home.
Exactly. But so she needs to get to 65,000 donations and she is struggling to.
Right. Because the thing is now, we've been talking a lot about how you had to have one or the other of these. But since there's now 23 candidates, we're getting to the point where you're going to have both.
Yeah.
So it's 1% in 3 approved public polls. And I think they've announced which of those polls they are now. I'm not sure what they are. But and 65,000 donations. So some people have one or the other, but not both. Well, and it was like you're going to have both.
This is also like, I think, a moment where we really should want her to remain in the conversation. Because is a moment where her sort of pet issue, the issue that she brings to the table, is becoming relevant. And so I feel like it's important that we make sure that she be at the table.
Yeah. And she'll do a great job.
Yeah,
I mean, she'll be good in a debate. Like, if you will like her in the debate. I think, probably. At least in terms of, like, thinking that she is a person who could be the president.
Right.
You may not agree with everything that comes out of her mouth.
And we certainly don't.
No, we don't.
But, yeah. But no, she's somebody who I think is somebody we want a place, we want to have a place at that table because she brings a specific focus that none of the other candidates bring in the same way that I think is valuable in this moment when abortion bills are coming out of our ears.
Yeah, exactly.
So...
And we talked about the Alabama one last week.
That got signed into law on Wednesday.
So that's official. I mean, it's not really official. It's official Alabama law, but it's not official Alabama
constitutional law.
That will ever end up taking effect, which I think is important to remember.
What's also important to remember is that Alabama, the very next day, executed a prisoner.
Oh, yes.
So
exactly.
Alabama is not leading in a conversation about who believes in life the most.
Yes.
Just FYI.
Yes. And just to remind you, because I don't know if we talked about the details last week, but it says doctors who perform an abortion could face up to 99 years in prison, which is similar punishment to rapists and murderers. It's actually less than a lot, depending on what sort of type of exceptions are or whatever. But I mean, like, it's longer than actual rape in many instances, which is insane considering that a woman may have to bear the child of the woman who raped her. Of the man who raped her, yes. Yikes.
That would be a confusing...
You don't get pregnant that way.
No.
I mean, a woman could rape a woman, but it would not
result in pregnancy. Just in case we didn't understand.
Science.
But so, in any case, again, and we talked about this a bit last week as well, but, you know, this isn't in effect... It doesn't go into effect for 6 months, and it probably won't go into effect.
No, and be outraged. Like, we're not implying that you shouldn't be, because you should be, because this is truly crazy.
Yeah.
However, you know, it's not scheduled to take effect for another 6 months. Laws that have been less insane have already been held up in the courts, the North Dakota one, the Iowa one. This will probably, it could take years to get to the Supreme Court because they're not going to take it until the lower courts have weighed in. It has been sort of the stance of the Supreme Court in the past to not take cases
where there's unanimous agreement from the lower court. With this court, nobody knows what's going
on. So every single one of these bills gets shot down in a lower court, which is likely, or at least possible anyway, if not likely, then the Supreme Court may never see it anyway, and I know Alabama was sort of like writing this with the intention that it would actually get to the Supreme Court, but a lot of Republicans were even sort of like, I don't know that we want this one to get to the Supreme Court.
This is not the one, because it doesn't have exceptions for rape and incest.
Right, if you are a Democrat right now, yes, panic about this, but also hope that this is the one that SCOTUS decides to hear, because this is too much. It's too cuckoo.
But one reason to be outraged is because other states are following suit in an effort to sort of bombard the courts with these laws. So Missouri enacted a similar ban.
Right. And I would say that the Missouri one is...
It's worse.
It's worse in the sense that they wrote it specifically to maybe make it out of a court. At least a court somewhere.
Right. It's not worse in the sense that the restrictions of the law are worse,
it's
but
not.
In terms of what it offers to our court situation, it's worse.
Because and they were sort of like the GOP representative who like was the main writer of this said specifically, he was
Nick
like
Schroer.
we looked at like every writing on abortion law of courts who have shot things down, what they've shot down, what they've allowed to sort of proceed in every state across the country, and you know, I mean, like, they didn't just do this based on sort of like their love of fetuses.
Right.
They did this based on both their love of fetuses and actual law, which is, I think, scarier, and people have not been paying quite as much attention to it because everybody's been so up in arms about the insanity of the Alabama one, which is understandable. But like the Missouri one is just sort of like the one that you might look at and be like, yikes. This is the one that could potentially have a different ruling that could get something in front of the Supreme Court. This is something that I've dinged
Democrats for in the past, and I'm going to do it again.
Please.
But one of the things that is different about the Missouri law than the Alabama law or than a policy that abortion should be fully unrestricted is once we have a conversation about what the date is that's the right cutoff date, we're having the wrong conversation. So a lot of candidates, and I've actually heard this in the response to these bills from people in the media, from, you know, pundits and other people, that, you know, people will say things like, well, you know, of course we all agree that, you know, late-term abortion bans are okay, but these other ones aren't okay. And
right.
the Missouri law is what you get when you have given the go-ahead for the government to make a choice about when it is or is not acceptable right. for a woman to have bodily autonomy. The Alabama right. law gives the women no bodily autonomy. Right. It's a blanket statement about bodily autonomy, right. and that is that women don't have it.
This Missouri one is like some weird sort of like sliding scale of yeah. bodily autonomy. Basically.
But what it does, but once you are having the conversation about when is the appropriate right. cutoff
is it 8 weeks?
Date.
Is it 14 weeks? Right. Is it 18 weeks? Is it 20? Because they basically have provisions for like, all of those, like, if the exactly. 8 week one gets thrown out, then it sort of like defaults to 14. And like, they've got all these yeah. ways to like basically like continue banning abortion, even if sort of
their first version of it gets thrown out.
Right.
And that's like, if you are a person who is thinking, well, in my estimation, it should be banned at 25 weeks or, you know, whatever the, if it should be banned two trimesters right. in, then you are now a part of that conversation. And that's yeah. the wrong conversation.
Right.
That's a conversation where you agree that the Missouri law is based on legal precedent that should be upheld. And you just disagree about when that's being upheld. But for some reason, you think that you know better when women who are in their third trimester, who right. are facing life-threatening medical emergencies, should be able to have an abortion better yeah. than their doctors do.
Right.
And that is, I think, the wrong sort of, it's the wrong framing of the issue. You know, the framing of the issue. And I think in many ways, part of the issue that we're having here is that the framing of the issue has always been about babies. And what we're talking about are not babies. We're talking about fetuses. Right. We're talking about women, though. Like, the framing of the issue has never been about the health of women
no.
as a whole. And that's why you hear a lot of people, and I've been talking to a lot of women about this week, where they've said, you know, I grew up in an environment where everyone was pro-life, and I was pro-life because I thought, well, I don't murder babies. I'm not that kind of a person. And, like, if that's the only framing of the issue that you ever get,
right.
then, sure, you would definitely be pro-life. But a framing of the issue that also talks about how this affects the health of women, posits those two sort of like ideas of life in as both valuable things,
right.
as opposed to just being like, well, you're either murdering babies or you're doing the moral thing.
right.
You know, it's not like a bill yeah. that restricts a woman's right to get an abortion, especially late in her pregnancy, is actually imperiling the life of live human women.
Right.
It's not just imperiling the life of babies, you know, like, and when we're talking about babies too, we're talking about a parasitic set of cells that are not equipped to
right.
survive on its own. We're not talking about your cousin's baby who you love,
yeah,
you know, or right. Donald Trump's version of an abortion where you give birth to a beautiful baby and then murder
right.
it, you know, right. like, what I think the sort of framing of the issue never focuses on how women are impacted. And that is how the framing of all women's health is
yeah.
always, you know, is always,
of course.
And it is always focused on, when is the baby? What is the baby?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
this Missouri law gets you into that conversation about a baby,
right.
but it still doesn't address what's the problem with restricting access to this medical procedure, which is women.
Yes.
The effect that it has on women's health.
Yeah.
So don't have that conversation. Don't
right.
talk to me about when it is moral
yeah.
to ban abortion.
Well,
it's not moral if you're not right. the person.
Well, that's because it's a bunch of old white men who are writing and voting on these things.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they don't care.
And it's a bunch of people who don't want you to have sex.
Sure.
So, like, do we really want to trust those people?
Right.
Those people who don't like fun? No.
Yeah.
Don't let a bunch of old white men who don't want you to have sex tell you
yeah.
what you can and can't do.
I mean, they want you to have sex with them, probably.
Well, yeah, well, obviously.
And they would also want you to get an abortion
if you had accidentally gotten
pregnant by them.
Of course. Of course.
But don't have sex with anyone else, and don't get an abortion if you get pregnant by anyone else.
Right. And don't tell anyone if you get pregnant by them and have an abortion.
No. Obviously. Duh.
Yeah, because then other people might know
right.
that they don't practice what they preach.
Right.
In any case, there
yeah.
are some other exciting states that are getting into the fray.
Yeah, Louisiana's getting up to this, and they have a Democratic governor. And if you would think to yourself, oh, hey, good, that'll get vetoed, it won't.
No. John Bel Edwards is not one of the great Democratic
and
governors.
Granted, you know, no, he is not at all. And
of the Democratic governors, if you
he has always claimed to be pro-life, so
yeah.
I suppose it should not be shocking, but it should. You would think that even as someone who has always claimed to be pro-life as a Democrat, one would hope that they would sort of be like, this might just be, once Republicans are being like, this is maybe getting out of hand,
yeah.
you would think that the Democratic governor could be like, hey,
this
maybe this
much.
Is getting out of hand.
Yeah. You would think that.
Right.
But this is why I don't think that there is room in our tent for pro-life people. And I know that that makes me a controversial person because the Democrats want to have room in their tent for everyone, including Republicans.
But sure.
I don't think there's
Joe Biden's got room.
Exactly. Oh, he has plenty of room in his tent. Yeah. He might himself personally be part of that. He might have room in his personal tent for this position.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's a Hyde Amendment guy. But but I don't think we have room in our tent for people that think that women don't deserve bodily autonomy.
Sure.
I think that is one of the basic things that we should all, you know, agree is not... You like with anything, like with gay marriage, you don't ever have to have an abortion. You know?
That's right.
You don't have to marry a gay person. You don't have to be transgender if you're not.
No, that's right.
You know? None of these things are things you have to do.
Yep.
You just don't have to be in my business about them. And once you're describing yourself as pro-life, you're making a moral assumption about how other people should act that is not broadly agreed upon. So it's not like murder where we all agree like, okay, murdering another human being is something that we shouldn't do. And theoretically we all agree on that, except that Alabama just murdered a live human being and many of these states also do that regularly.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, theoretically that is against the law.
Right.
But that is also something that is agreed upon by almost every moral framework.
Yeah.
That is not just something that Christians think. It is something that everyone thinks.
Correct.
It is something we agree is important for a society that thrives. Right. It is socially a sort of valuable thing that holds us together. That is not the same thing with abortion. You can personally be against abortion, but you cannot argue that that is a widely held position or that that is a position that is vital to our safety as a society because it actually imperils the safety of women regularly.
Yes.
So screw off everyone. But this is actually, this is getting a lot of discussion at the moment, which is good.
Yeah,
this could very easily go the way of gay marriage where it's like at a certain point, once you remind everyone what the problem is, then you're
Well, and this is the other thing, too. Like, I mean, I realize that the Supreme Court sort of is not necessarily one to really care about, or they're not supposed to care about sort of public sentiment. But this is support for policies like this don't get above 25% in any of the 50 states.
This is not a popular way, not a popular policy.
Yeah, not even a little bit. It's not popular amongst Republicans.
It's not popular amongst Catholics.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not popular among the very people that have sort of, that have generated this moral argument.
Right.
Because they also get abortions all the time.
Yeah.
Like, it is not popular with anyone that you poll.
No.
Besides a very specific group of evangelical Christians who are very specifically entrenched in communities that seem to have a lot of political agency and not a lot of people in them.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? But it is about controlling women. It is about
Is
about a much bigger issue than, you know, than just fetuses. Because, and I actually, my mother published something in Huffington Post this week about her experience having an illegal abortion before Roe.
Yeah.
And one thing that she talks about is a different time in her life where she had a spontaneous miscarriage and the doctor almost couldn't provide her necessary care that you would require after a miscarriage to make sure you don't get an infection because pregnancy tests kept showing that she was pregnant, even though she knew she had a miscarriage.
Yes, right.
And she almost was denied an important medical procedure after having a miscarriage based on abortion law because he couldn't risk getting arrested for it.
Right.
So there are other ways in which this impacts women's health. When we talk about restricting abortion, we're not just talking about restricting my right to get pregnant and then choose to have an abortion.
Yeah.
We're talking about how women are allowed to interact with their doctors about a variety of healthcare issues around reproductive health that aren't necessarily moral arguments for or against, you know, whether a fetus is when a fetus becomes a person, but are about things that just happen when you have a body that sometimes you need healthcare for.
Yeah.
In any case, Liz Warren has a plan for it.
Obviously.
Obviously.
She's got a plan for everything.
She's got a plan for everything.
Yeah.
She's got a plan for that.
Yeah.
She released her abortion rights platform. And actually, her very first town hall event or very first like campaign event.
Sure.
She got asked a really tough question about abortion by a former student of hers who she knew. And she had had a longstanding history of having a disagreement with this woman about, you know, abortion. And I thought that was kind of like an interesting, it was an unvetted question. I thought it was an interesting moment because we had seen on the campaign trail Hillary Clinton repeatedly not address that question to my satisfaction.
Oh, that's right.
You know,
yes.
Repeatedly
on a
Fox News town hall, she said she was in favor of late-term abortion bans. Like I said repeatedly earlier, that puts you in the league of what's the right week to cut it off, not the league of should women get to decide what the right thing to do with their own body is.
Yeah.
And so I was interested to hear what she would say because the framing of the question was very much like meant to make her seem like a villain if she answered that she was. And she was incredibly clear and explained it incredibly succinctly and said, I know we disagree about this and that's okay, but we are not just talking about you and we're not just talking about this situation. This is an issue that has these, you know, and explained her position on it without sort of equivocating in response to a really tough question about it. So I believed that she had it in her already, because that was really the first moment of her sort of like political, you know, awareness, or, you know, for this campaign thing. It was her, it was her first big moment. So on Friday, they released an abortion rights platform that centers on the establishment of, quote, affirmative statutory rights that would block states from interfering in healthcare, you know, in a healthcare provider's ability to provide medical care, including abortion to women, and also block a state's power to prevent patients from getting that care.
Yeah.
So that is what we're looking for.
Right. That's her. That's like the main sort of like piece of that legislation. She also like joined some of the other Democrats in urging the rollback of this like 1976 restriction of the use of federal funds to pay for abortions.
Isn't that the Hyde Amendment?
I think that's the Hyde Amendment. Yeah, exactly.
Which Joe Biden is in favor of, by the way.
Yes, exactly.
So was Tim Kaine. Joe Biden and Tim Kaine are the same person, by the way. If you're wondering who you don't like from history, that if he had a less fun smile, Joe Biden would be, it would be Tim Kaine.
Yeah.
But so she is on top of that.
Yeah. I mean, of course she
and
is.
Also,
she's on top of everything.
Yeah. And there's, you know, there's some Trump policies as well that limit abortion access and block federally funded clinics from providing counseling about abortion, things like that. She obviously also made a statement about those things.
Yeah.
But so, and also private insurers' ability to not
to
cover,
deny that, right? Yeah.
To deny care for abortions. Which is, I think, a sort of overlooked part of this conversation that one thing the conservative movement has been really effective at doing is figuring out ways to make abortions legal but inaccessible.
Right.
And one of the ways that you can do that, it's like your plan not providing birth control. You can make it so that women have no viable way to pay for an abortion or no place to get it or whatever it is.
Yes.
And so one thing that you want to make sure when you're thinking about how to ensure that abortion is not just legal but accessible is you have to make sure that, you know, there is a way for people to get to a clinic that provides them safely and then also pay for them.
Yeah.
Which if your insurance is like, oh no, we could never pay for that, and then also no federally funded program is allowed to pay for it, then, you know, maybe you're fine if you're a middle or upper middle class person, but that doesn't leave you fine if you don't have the money to like cover gas.
Right. Yeah.
In any case. Trump also came out with, like, some craziness immigration plan.
It doesn't make any sense.
It's a nonsense.
Nobody thinks it makes any sense. It's dead on arrival. Nobody's going to vote for it. Republicans in the Senate probably aren't even going to vote for it.
No.
It's, like, it's unhinged.
It's a stupid plan.
It's, like, actually doesn't make sense.
Well, it actually doesn't make sense, and it's also, like, so overtly meant as a messaging strategy over any other kind of strategy, because it's really just about saying the words highly skilled and then saying that we're going to get rid of chain migration.
Right.
Chain migration is just people coming to be with their families.
Right. But he also loves to talk about how immigration is like, you know, depressing wages and this and that and the other. But then he wants to bring more people in just because.
He's trying to bring in the kind of people who can then depress wages in fields where Americans actually make a lot of money.
Right,
it's like,
exactly.
Forget these low wage fields. Let's go after doctors and lawyers.
Right,
bring in some highly skilled people. Maybe we can drive wages down in those fields instead. Because apparently if immigrants drive down wages, which is his own claim, that's not our claim.
No.
We know that's not actually true.
Right.
But if immigrants theoretically drive down wages, then why do we want to bring in more immigrants who are going to take top-level jobs as opposed to the jobs at the bottom that help Americans sort of rise out of the lowest level, the lowest rung of the working class? Like, it doesn't make any sense from his own logic.
Yeah.
You know? The faulty logic they're using is being defied by their own plan.
Yeah.
Because basically their plan is just to give out more high-skill visas and fewer family, you know, whatchamacallit visas.
Whatchamacallit visas. The family visas
where you go to be with your family.
The
family whatchamacallit visas.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
People know
what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Family sponsored visas.
There you go.
But in any case, they're just trying to say the word high skill.
Oh yeah.
As much as they can in the news because he's running for president.
Well. Yeah. Exactly.
One fun statistic that is the only one that's worth mentioning in the story, but is important to mention, is that 47% of migrants who entered the U.S. on family-sponsored or diversity lottery visas had a college degree, whereas the U.S.-born population, that figure is 29%. So the family-sponsored visa program is bringing in higher skilled workers than just America is providing to itself.
Right, Americans reproducing.
Right, it's providing. So maybe we should just stop doing that and only bring in immigrants. I mean, maybe everything would improve.
Yeah.
Also, the assumption that the economy isn't partially kept afloat, as we have it constructed now at least, by low-wage labor provided by immigrants.
Totally.
Is incredible. Anyway, I mean, everything becomes more expensive if we decide we can't have farm workers hiring, you know, migrant farm workers, or we can't have, you know, migrant construction workers. There are so many sectors of our economy that rely on immigrant labor, even though, you know, it would be great if everyone was making a living wage, obviously.
Sure.
But in a world in which their very vision for the economy doesn't allow for that.
Yeah.
What are they doing trying to get rid of cheap fucking food?
I mean, because they don't care if we, the consumer, are also fucked.
They don't care about anything.
Right.
I mean, the consumer have already been fucked. Brent and I looked at washing machines the other day because Brent is moving. Yes. And washing machines are more expensive than they used to be. And part of that is because of the tariffs with China.
Yep.
So most washing machines are produced
in China. Of those tariffs, also the same farmers who are, you know, under this plan are not going to be able to get cheap labor are already getting hosed under these tariffs.
Exactly.
So, I mean, it's like they're just, you know, getting screwed every which way.
Yeah. The plan is so inconsistent, which is part of what's so frustrating about it. It's like a chaotic plan. Also, it's not a real plan because there's no, like, proposal in front of Congress. It's a four-page summary with pictographs and vague theories.
Well, that's what he likes. Yeah. Like pictures.
Exactly.
And his name in things.
Yes. Yeah. I'm sure it says Trump in it.
Oh, I'm sure it does too.
Meanwhile, are we going to war with Iran for no reason right now?
Maybe. I mean, if John Bolton can have his way, we are.
Yeah. Mr. Mustache over there is drumming up like a very fake context in which to go to war with Iran. I guess so we can manufacture a fake emergency. I don't know.
Well, he has, you know, he has experience in this.
Like, so
if you want somebody on your team to be able to drum up a fake war.
That's the guy.
Yeah. You called. Yeah.
He's in favor of a fake war with everyone. Too. Obviously. I mean, him and his mustache will go to war with
it doesn't
anyone
even
who asks.
Seem like the Secretary of State, who's a garbage person, even is interested in this.
I mean,
so much though that I feel like I read something this week that those two were sort of like at each other's throats.
This I feel like could actually create some problems with them with Congress, because basically they're trying to like create the context so that they can use the 2001 use of force resolution against Iraq to justify a war with Iran.
Right.
And that has nothing to do with anything.
I know.
That's a complete, they're drawing complete nonsense conclusions where they're like, well, Iran has Al-Qaeda and Al-Qaeda attacked us in 2011. And maybe they had something to do with the U.S. embassy bombing in Baghdad at some point. And so you can see how there's a need to protect ourselves from Iran because of Baghdad, because of Al-Qaeda. It's like a fake thing that they just made up.
That's right.
But let this be the moment where we remember that we should not have allowed a use of force resolution on a dumb pretext in 2001, and that use of force resolution should not still be in effect.
Correct.
All of these things are here to remind us that Congress should be the one who declares war and that Congress could take back that power.
Yes.
So one thing that happened to us in 2001 is we, for some reason, stopped caring if Congress thought we should go to war too. We just like, oh, the president wants to go to war. He has a fake reason for doing it.
Yeah.
Let's let him do whatever he wants.
Yeah, sure. Let's go.
He seems fine.
Let's do it.
He seems like a smart guy.
Yeah.
And now what we're learning is that there are long-term consequences to coming up with dumb policy that you didn't think through. There's a reason that we give Congress the right to declare war and not the president solely. And it's because presidents can be lunatics for 4 years or eight years. And Congress, theoretically, has enough people that they can maybe have a like discussion about whether the American people actually benefit from said policy.
Yeah. Well, it's so interesting because like I feel like the discussion of this within the administration coming from John Bolton and then also whatever the hell his name is, the Secretary of State, who gives a rip.
How many are we in now? I'm losing track of
I mean,
I've lost track
of the only name I can come up with is Rex Tillerson, and that's not right.
That's long gone.
Long, not right. Anyway... the fact that those two are people who, like, could be coming up with this policy in the first place is so insane because they are not even... Well, look, Trump and John Bolton, in theory... I mean, we don't know what Trump thinks about foreign policy because he probably doesn't understand it. He couldn't find Iran on a map. I don't know if he could find America on a map. Like, let's be honest. But, I mean, at least the things that he said to get himself elected... We're sort of more on the not as extreme end, at least in terms of foreign policy. Now,
we know he doesn't know
what he thinks about anything.
No, but he has spent years criticizing this very use of force resolution.
Correct.
And Democrats, like Hillary Clinton, for voting for it.
So it was always questionable that he called John Bolton to be his national security advisor anyway. Everybody thought that was a real head scratcher because it didn't make any sense. But one would hope, and I don't know why one would hope this,
one would hope
that the president would be like, let's not do this. But I'm certainly not putting any trust in him to have any pushback on a war. Especially he may just like want to go to war.
Well, it probably sounds like a really heroic thing to do.
Another Veep reference. Exactly. In that one episode where she was like, I want to be president again. And she was like, and this time I want a war. You know? I mean, having a war as a president sometimes can really be what you're looking for.
He's only playing the president on TV anyway.
Right.
I mean, that's what TV presidents do.
Yeah.
But what's confusing here is that, so there are some people in the GOP, obviously the Democrats are not on board with this.
No.
There are also some Republicans not on board with it. But Rand Paul has been out there. Rand Paul, who is an isolationist of the highest order, usually, is out there giving sort of credence to the idea that this is like a legit thing. He actually, like, this is so confusing. He was at a Foreign Relations Committee hearing and said, the factual question with respect to Iran's connections to Al-Qaeda is very real. They have hosted Al-Qaeda. They have permitted Al-Qaeda to transit their country. There is no doubt there is a connection between them and the Islamic Republic of Iran and Al-Qaeda. Period. Full stop. Why is he giving cover to going into an unnecessary war? That is literally contrary to everything he stands for.
I know.
So, like, what is happening anymore?
I don't know.
And are we going to war with Iran? And if so, why?
I don't know.
It's so confusing.
I can't answer the question. But, I mean, coming from Rand Paul, I would contend the only thing that I could maybe pick out of that statement that might be a reason to go to war is the word Islamic.
Right. Sure. Certainly doesn't love that.
If I had to just guess.
But I mean, he is in the past been one of the few people who was my hatred of Muslims is not enough to make me want to go to war.
Yeah, I know.
He wants to keep them out of his life.
Right,
but
exactly.
Not to go to war with them. That's the only redeeming quality he had.
Yeah, I know.
This is a man whose neighbors hate him,
right,
as we learned in that important Bowling Green massacre.
That's right.
But the Bowling Green massacre was Sarah Palin, but then there was a real Bowling Green massacre where he got into a huge fight with his neighbor.
No,
there,
Kellyanne Conway
was the board. Right, that wasn't Sarah Palin.
They're a similar.
It's so hard to know anymore. Yeah, Kellyanne Conway made up the Bowling Green Massacre, and then Rand Paul invented the Bowling Green Massacre by going and trying to massacre his neighbor over a lawn disagreement.
Yeah.
That was the most entertaining thing he's ever
done.
Meanwhile, the House is finally doing some more poking of the bear, at least.
Yeah. They passed, like, a super comprehensive, like, sweeping LGBTQ rights bill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Equality Act.
Yeah. And a bipartisan one.
Yeah. There were 8 Republicans on it. And you know what? In honor of those 8 Republicans, we're going to tell you who they are.
Yeah.
Because I felt like it was actually really hard to find this information.
Say their names.
Yeah. It was hard to find this information. And I thought, you know what? We should be rewarding Republicans when they do the right thing break ranks. Because there are currently too many of them not.
Yeah.
So here's who it was. So from Indiana, we have Susan Brooks. Mm-hmm. From Florida, we have Mario Diaz-Balart, or Ballart, I think. Pennsylvania, Brian Fitzpatrick. Texas, Will Hurd. I was a little surprised by that, actually. Oregon, Greg Walden. And then from New York, we have John Katko, Tom Reed, and Elise Stefanik. Good work, guys. Not being complete assholes.
Spoke
every once in a while.
Yep.
Yeah. The other Republicans were having a crazy field day.
Oh, man. This really caused them to just, like, devolve into some serious madness.
Well, they had a little bit of a confusing situation on their hands because this, like abortion, is massively popular. LGBT rights are massively popular.
Sure.
Most Americans think that we should just stop bothering LGBT people.
Right. I was going to say, most Americans think that much like women, LGBTQ people are also people.
Right. Are other people that if they don't want to deal with, they just don't have to worry about.
That's right. Yeah.
And so they had to instead make it about them.
Oh, yes.
And about feminism.
Right.
Which was my favorite part.
Yes. Well, and about Christianity.
And,
because now they're going to be persecuted.
Being about them.
Right.
Then the them argument was that it was going to unleash federal persecution of Christians.
Oh, my.
And then it was going to lead to the nation's downfall and make the Lord, quote, vomit you out.
Ooh, yuck.
Ooh. But also, they tried to lean on this sort of, like, weirdly pseudo-feminist argument.
Oh, yeah.
Vicky Hatzger, Hatzler, who's a Republican rep, said a vote for this bill is a vote against women.
Okay.
Because they were going on about how men were going to compete in women's sports and then, you know, women weren't going to have anything.
Classic.
And then the other thing that they do is specifically when it comes to trans people, they try to frame the trans rights conversation as being about men trying to sneak into your bathroom.
Oh my gosh.
And first of all, there are women that are trans too. Being trans doesn't mean you're a man who has a sneaky desire to sneak into women's restrooms.
Correct.
And also being trans makes you a person much more likely to be a target of violence than it does make you more likely to be a person who commits violence.
Correct.
Now, this exists. This threat of violence in bathrooms or violence in the world does exist. It is men pretending to be regular men who are committing these acts of violence, though. It is not trans men.
No.
It is just everyday men who are routinely encouraged to commit violent acts against women.
Yes.
And who have nothing to do with the trans community.
Right. We remember this from talking about some of these bathroom bills that have happened. That there are...
Yeah, because they're back to panicking
there
about
There are like... There's pretty much like 0%...
It's not happening out there.
It doesn't happen.
No.
Like trans people are not attacking people in bathrooms.
Right.
Like, it's not a thing that's going on.
No. They are sometimes being attacked themselves.
Attacked in bathrooms. But usually what they're attempting to do when walking into the bathroom is to use that bathroom.
Like all people, they are people who need to use the bathroom.
Right.
It sort of draws a comparison between two things that are happening. One being that trans people sometimes do need to use the bathroom. And other things being that women are often attacked for no reason by people.
Right.
But those people are never really trans men.
People.
It is just...
No.
Usually other men. It's
Correct.
Usually men.
It's men.
But it's the regular kind that we're all thinking of here,
right.
Where the men that they believe have the right to be stomping around doing whatever they damn well please, those are the men committing the violent acts against women.
Right.
So them equating those two things was bizarre. But basically this kind of expands the Civil Rights Act to include LGBT people. It is something that 70% of Americans support, having just like comprehensive protections for LGBT people. And it's a good idea.
If there's one thing that Congress... isn't afraid to do, it's to ignore the will of 70% or more of the country.
That's why we don't have 98%.
Why we don't have gun laws.
That's right.
By the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're willing to ignore a majority of the country.
Yeah, they are unbothered by what the country thinks.
Any old time. No big deal for them. Meanwhile, Don Jr. is going to testify.
Right.
We were telling you that crazy story yesterday where Richard Burr subpoenaed him, and he had ignored the first subpoena, and no one knew if he was actually going to show, and it was going to be this big showdown.
And we said last week, I mean, we're shocked by this, because we talked about, like, the three sort of, like, scenarios, whether he could plead the fifth, or he could just ignore it, or he could do this or that. You know, there were all these different scenarios that he could do, and I remember I was the one that said it. You may have agreed with me, but I was like, there is no way he is actually going to show up and testify.
I know. Now, he still has time to back out,
well,
so, you know, the testimony is scheduled for mid-June, and it will be behind closed doors. But there was a huge amount of pressure on Burr to withdraw the subpoena first of all, and
he
didn't buckle to that. So that's our second transgressive act of the week after, you know, we have Justin Amash coming out for impeachment. Mm-hmm. And then they also, you know, Don Jr.'s lawyers were prepared to draft a thing saying he was going to defy the subpoena.
Yeah.
That's what their plan was.
Yeah.
And then somehow they worked something out at the last minute, and now he's going to appear in June. Because he was supposed to appear in May, and he defied that subpoena and went hunting instead.
There are some stipulations on it, but that's, I suppose, to be expected.
Well,
probably,
they had to make an agreement. The interview is going to be limited to 2 to 4 hours, and it's going to have a limited scope of 5 to 6 topics. But questions about that Trump Tower meeting in 2016 in June and the Trump Tower Moscow project are not going to be off limits. Their follow-ups will be limited.
And they can ask him about things that they have previously asked him if someone else told the committee something different.
Yes.
So if there's any discrepancy between his past testimony and what other people said about that in regards to that testimony, then they can ask him about that.
He is allowed, though, to just refer them to his old testimony if he feels like it, which is annoying. And they all agreed this would be the last time he would be asked to come before this committee in relation to the Russian interference investigation.
Yeah.
But there's going to be so many crimes to investigate.
Oh.
So it's like, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
But so, in any case, we're excited to see what happens.
Yeah.
It'll be behind closed doors.
I know,
but
it's a bomb room. But
this time, the senators themselves are going to be there. The last time he was questioned, the other thing that happened, because that was also behind closed doors, was that only staffers were there. The senators themselves weren't there. So this time, the actual senators are going to sit with him.
Yeah.
And that is a different environment.
Totally.
Especially when some of those senators are Democrats.
Yep.
But so, in any case, this is all very exciting. Times. And then the most exciting thing of the week is that Arnold Schwarzenegger got like drop kicked at some event in South Africa. And
I know
he just carried on because
he did.
It's a brick.
And if you've seen this video, like, it's serious.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he really gets like, he's just sort of like standing there. He's talking to camera and he like gets
like
this guy like really goes for it.
Well,
like comes
like
running
runs.
From across the room
yeah.
and then just like jumps into him and he gets knocked over and then he just gets on up and sort of carries on. Snapchatting, I think.
He was taking pictures of people. And then the guy was carried away screaming, "Help me, I need a Lamborghini."
That's not a way to get it, by
the
way.
So amazing on so many levels. But apparently this is a guy who is like known to police in South Africa. And apparently this is the kind of crazy stunt people are doing in South Africa. Like, what is going on there?
Yeah.
But Schwarzenegger tried to really downplay the incident. And was like, "Oh, I just thought the crowd was jostling."
Okay.
And I was like, okay.
Right. We know that you're a strong man, but like...
Pull your life together.
You know that that hurt.
A kick like, to the back is not... At least for a second. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh. He's fine, though.
Right. He's fine. He's 71.
Yeah, I know. He's...
I didn't realize.
Older than... Well, you know, all that body... All the photos you see of him are from his bodybuilding era.
And you know what? He was not a great governor, but stop drop kicking him because he's working on something that I approve of right now.
Yeah,
he's
exactly.
He's trying to...
Redistricting.
Fix, yeah, exactly.
No, that's... He's somebody...
Trying to fix gerrymandering right
some
now.
Some people... really rise to the occasion after they leave office.
Totally.
You know, a lot of people who didn't think Jimmy Carter was a great president could not argue now that he's not been a great ex-president. He's
Correct.
Been the best ex-president.
Right.
There's no better ex-president than Jimmy Carter.
That's right.
So even if you hated him when he was president, then who cares?
What are you going to do? Hate him while he's, like, building houses for
At
poor
92,
people?
While he has cancer and, you know.
No, you can't do
that. No, you just can't do that. But I feel like Arnold Schwarzenegger is someone who is, like, working to slowly redeem himself by... Instead of focusing on the areas in which he has bad ideas, just sort of slow, like focusing his life on
which
the areas where he has, with the one area where he had a good one.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And listen, that's what you should do.
Yeah.
If you can do something that is productive for society, you don't have to be great at everything.
So
you shouldn't
true.
Be the governor if you can't be great at more things.
No,
but
that's true.
If you leave the governorship and think, what can I do that is helpful? I could do something helpful, or I could be a lobbyist for, you know, oil and gas, or, you know,
right.
could do all these things. Just choose the Schwarzenegger route.
That's right.
Go the helpful route.
Yep.
Do your best.
Yep.
Will you always work it out? No, but just try.
And sometimes you'll get drop kicked.
Yeah, well, apparently.
You know?
This isn't, I mean, come on. There are so many people that you could drop kick in American politics right now that are not
obviously.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Right.
It's the least of our worries at this moment.
Yeah.
In any case, that's the news this week.
That's it.
We'll be back a little late next week because it's holiday weekend. But we will be here. To
yes.
tell you all the news, I
That's
guess.
Right. sure.
Talk to you then. Bye.